investment steps here.
Next year, they definitely have to have steps.
Good job.
Good? I think this is, by the way, because I sat in on the last one, I think the discussion at the tables is the highlight of this conference.
I'm sorry that we couldn't be here for that part. Yeah. We had to go answer your questions, and we noticed a theme, or Michelle really noticed a theme. Can you share your observation?
A lot of the questions, when we have a question for you guys, a lot of the questions that came back that we were noshing on in here were really about what other people could do or how you could get other people to do stuff. We were really wondering, particularly given what Jesse had to say, do you all feel like you really understand how powerful you are in this issue and how much power you have to make change happen? Just kind of a show of hands if you really feel what you're able to do. We got to see some more hands. That's what we got to do. We got to get some more hands.
Good. You're waiting. You have the power right now. Right now. It's pretty amazing. You do. And then you're going to learn more steps to making yourself even more empowered. We're going to start off with the first question, which was, if there are no downsides to going green, why aren't global warming solutions more widespread? Michelle.
I think it's really the difference between an aspirin and a vitamin. You know, if you've got a headache, you're going to take an aspirin. But if you know vitamins are good for you, maybe you will, maybe you won't. It's not really that important. And if you look at what the statistics are, you know, where people are really making changes, where there's political change, it's coming from among younger demographics. You know, younger Americans feel for the first time ever in America's history that they're not going to have it as good as their parents did, and this is a big part of that issue. And from coastal communities who see the water rising charts and know they're about to be underwater.
Mm-hmm. Adam?
I'm very optimistic about our ability to make changes, and I think we can do it without having to sacrifice our way of life. There are downsides right now with the practical solutions that are being offered many times. So, for example, I hear a lot of people talking about raising gas prices. We should raise gas prices to $7 a gallon, and that would change things. And it would. It would make a lot of people have to, you know, go to sleep without heat at night. It would do a lot of things that would be real downsides. So some of the solutions, we should just be honest with ourselves, are not great solutions, and we have to find better ones. And I think that's incumbent on us to do.
And to acknowledge when it's like, well, this is a step. This is a step in the right direction, but we still have to go further and further and further. And one of the questions that was asked was, going green is about to cross a threshold, right? That whole idea that we're moving over and really feeling that groundswell of change that we're here to talk about. And it will become part of the cultural norm. But how can we prevent it from stagnating as an issue? So, Lori, what do you have to say about
that? Well, I think it will become... first of all, going green is not a trend, okay? This isn't trendy. This is a way of life, and we are getting there. But we're at the very beginning of this movement. That's what's so exciting for you guys going out into the workplace and the job market. I mean, this is just the beginning of this explosion, like we were talking about the internet. You know, how exciting to be at the beginning of something this big and this, you know, powerful. And I just completely lost my train of thought. What was the question? How are we going to keep it from...
How are we going to keep it from being just staying as an issue?
Oh, well, one thing I think that's going to unfortunately help us is the weather. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, waking up this morning and hearing about that tornado in Atlanta, it was just, you know, it just was really upsetting. But the weather, unfortunately, is going to keep this issue front and center. You know, fiercer storms, fiercer tornadoes, in season, out of season, hurricanes, floods, droughts. I mean, this is going to keep this issue front and center.
And I would just tag on to that. So we care about the climate, and we're fighting for the climate. Well, at least I am, because this is about people, right? This isn't just about the natural environment around us. And I think we have an opportunity, maybe unlike the environmental movement of the past, to put the focus front and center on people. And as it becomes more and more trendy, and again, it's not a trend, it's a way of life to go green, and you see it everywhere, and you have more consumer choices, and people are like, okay, fine, everyone went green. Let's keep the focus on the people, because it's going to take a while. It's going to take generations to even reverse the damage we've already done. So let's focus on these, you know, high levels of asthma that we have to turn around. Let's focus internationally on people that are literally feeling the impacts of global climate change right now, how low-income folks are disproportionately feeling the impacts. We got to keep this people-focused, and that we are going to continue to fight for people until we have basic equal rights and access to clean water and clean air and, you know, green sustainable jobs too. So that's how I think we keep it from stagnating.
And if you at any point think it's about them or we've already done enough, you know, I changed my light bulbs, I have my reusable water bottle, there is such a host of opportunities that we don't even realize yet, of stuff that we haven't figured out yet that we're still going to need more work, you know, that we're still going to have to do more work on. So I think that provides a tremendous opportunity, and that leads us to our next question, which is what will it take to bring the environmental movement together to work in collaboration rather than fighting across organizations and competing for funding? How do we recognize that this is for all of us? Michelle?
I think an important component of that is to realize who we are as the environmental movement and be a little bit aware of our roots. Because the environmental movement in the U.S. really grew up around fighting against things instead of fighting for things and thinking about single issues, because that's the way our policy mechanisms work. It's, you know, it's EPA, it's DOE, it's regulating this, it's regulating that, rather than coalescing together around a shared future vision and fighting for a difference. And just understanding where we came from rather than sticking in the same bad habits can make a huge difference. And, again, just sort of magnify the power, the voice that we have in the population at large.
I'm sure Adam has a comment on this, too. But I would like to add that we have to stop holding each other up to a gold standard that nobody can live up to. And I think this was a big problem with the environmental movement. Environmentalists do it to each other. You know, I mean, there's every time I give a speech, the first thing someone asks me is, well, Lori, do you eat meat? You know, meaning that, well, if I do eat meat, then I have no right to talk about these issues. No. But you know what? I'm a meat reducer now. And I think we have to bring everybody into this movement instead of pushing people out.
I'm also really proud. I'm proud to sit here as the director of the Energy Action Coalition, which is living proof that young people understand our need to work together and not fight over resources. So the Energy Action Coalition, we are a coalition of 46 youth environmental organizations across the U.S. and Canada, and not just environmental, social justice organizations, indigenous organizations, environmental justice organizations, and we have all come together under one banner to say we are united in our fight for a clean and just energy future. And collectively, we're able to run the Campus Climate Challenge on almost everybody's campus that's probably sitting in this room right now. And instead of going to foundations and competing against one another for money, we go all together. We say it's more important that we work collaboratively. So let's give a round of applause for young people understanding what's up. And let's spread this model of collaborative work to the rest of the community so that we can focus on those amazing solutions instead of fighting one another.
She's so good at plugging her thing. You get extra points for that. But you actually made me think of something, which is just a very quick little plug, which is the idea behind the virtual march was that it would include everybody. So every major environmental group is a member. The St. Louis Rams are a member. You know, athletes, Republicans, Democrats, mayors, governors. I mean, again, it's about everyone. And if we don't include everyone in this movement, we're not going to get where we have to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Adam, do you want to weigh in?
I was actually thinking, Lori, I think the first time you asked me to join the march was in San Francisco at this World Environment Day. Right. And it was like, I said hello, and then you were like, have you joined the march yet? And it was like, have you joined the march yet? And it just sort of reminded me that, you know, it's the old Cesar Chavez saying, it's like, how do you build a movement? And he goes, well, there's only one way to do it. You ask one person, they ask one person, and they tell one person, it's one person at a time. And what Lori's been so great at is just having every conversation she asks. And you should ask yourself, in your conversations, are you asking something of someone? People want to commit. They want to do something. They just need to be invited to do it. And then they'll take that step.
Thank you. And asking of yourself, I sometimes it's really easy to go, well, look at what that person did. And they flew. And what are they driving? And what are they eating? And I think that's just that's not inclusive, and it's a terrible guilt is a terrible motivator, and we're not going to guilt people into joining us here.
But peer pressure works. So that's let's not just dump it all out the thing.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. But I think to make that distinction and say I don't want to feel crappy about what I'm doing. I want to feel inspired to do something else.
But once someone's educated, they're going to make the choice. Would you rather drive a car that has gets 40 miles a gallon, or one gets 20? The choice is once you're educated, I think you're gonna make the choice.
I think it's not always that easy because we have conflicting needs. It's like, well, I want to get a Prius, but I can't afford one. So it's like there's also middle ground. So to remember,
yes,
there's a whole continuum here for everyone. Jesse.
Well, there's this question that I'm just dying for us to get to. So are we going to talk about how we make this the biggest possible issue?
Oh, I was going to save it till the next thing, but we're going to get right to it right now. How can we make climate a voting issue in the next election?
Okay, so I am like lying awake at night thinking about this right now because I think it's so important. So I think we need to be, every time a candidate on the local, state, or federal level comes to court our vote, because we are like the hottest vote in America right now, we got to be asking them about climate. And you know what? Not only asking, we got to be telling them. And we have to tell them solutions that are as bold as the problem. We have to say we want a moratorium on coal right now. We have to say we don't just want green jobs, we want millions of them, 5 million green new jobs. We have to talk about reduction. So I'm saying every time a candidate comes to court our vote, we are there telling them what we want. We are demonstrating that we're active on these issues. Al Gore asked why we aren't chaining ourselves to coal plants. Now, I am not telling you all to go chain yourself to coal plants, but for some people, that's going to be the right decision. For other people, it's going to be figuring out how you shut down that coal plant on your campus all during election season so that the media is covering it.
Or unplugging your charger.
Unplugging your charger. Or what are we doing to elevate the amazing green jobs work that's happening right now in Pittsburgh and Milwaukee and Oakland, and making a media story out of that? And what are we going to do to help build a list of at least a million of us, a million young people who don't commit to just voting on the climate, but who commit to staying there and staying that active? So we're there the week after the election, and we're there 3 months later, and we don't stop until we get the results that we want. So I'm asking that you all join me in this effort.
One quick thing I'll add to that. Of all the debates that we've seen so far, and there's been a lot of debates, 3,000 questions, more questions about UFOs than global warming. 6 questions on global warming out of 3,000. That is unacceptable. Government doesn't change till the people demand it. And that's where the power in you comes in.
And that's a beautiful way to wrap up this session. PJ is now going to come and give us a report of what you all discussed at your tables. Thank you.
Just like the last section, the theme team was sort of like drinking from a fire hose. Just so many good ideas and so many great things. So they tried to distill this into some key themes. The first idea that emerged was that universities should link like-minded organizations on campus to form coalitions, and also form coalitions between universities and city government officials to focus both on on-campus and off-campus energy efficiency initiatives. Universities should also use their leverage to network with state governments for sustainability policies. Schools ought to work with public transportation to reduce energy use. They ought to host more green events with green themes that help students visualize consumption and impact. Sponsor competitions for incentives for going green. Provide an easily accessible portal to disseminate information on campus climate solutions for campuses, a climate change wiki or other things like that. And by the way, before I forget, CGIU website will actually have some bulletin boards sort of set up in the next couple of days. We're going to try to identify some themes that might be of interest and allow you all to kind of identify areas that you're most interested in and want to hook up with others. There's also a Facebook site, so hopefully there's lots of continuing ways for all of you to keep networking beyond today. Have student clubs review university budgets for their impact on sustainability. Leverage architectural programs within schools to customize solutions. Set up a university office of sustainability for clubs to work with campus on work on campus issues and create a student resource center. Reinvest money made from energy-saving projects to new energy-saving projects to energy-saving products. The idea of if something breaks, replace it with something that's sustainable. And finally, an observation that in the reuse, reduce, recycle, that the first two R's kind of get lost in that formulation. We ought to think more about those. And we ought to add a fourth R, rethink. And finally, an idea, a very specific idea, in freshman orientation packets to add green-friendly products and potentially suggestions about where people can buy them. Back to the panel.
Awesome. Thank you. One thing that really struck me when PJ was talking was something that was mentioned just when we wrapped up earlier. We're all still working on this, right? None of us are perfect. I think right now we're all holding up a bunch of sheets of paper. You know, deforestation, big problem, relates to climate change. Right? We've got some bottled water and plastic containers. We're having some challenges trying to recycle our paper here at the event. I think also we have to be compassionate with ourselves. And we have to be really... we should really be inspiring. We have to really also say, like, we're doing the best we can, and we can do more. And how do we figure out how to do more? So keep holding those things in balance. And Lori's nodding her head in agreement.
I totally agree. Just, you know, are we going to wrap up with just a couple
quick
things?
I
would just like to say for everybody to join the virtual march at stopglobalwarming.org so we can count you. We're counting everyone who joins as someone who's demanding solutions and send it to three people. By the way, every time you send an article in the newspaper about global warming to three friends, that's activism. You're an activist. You're educating the public. So do that. And also, I just want to say, make global warming a voting issue. This is critical because we need personal change, but we need serious federal change, and we have an opportunity coming up here in November.
Thank you. Michelle.
Two things. One, sort of collective action as students. If your university hasn't already joined the climate commitment, get them to join, because a lot of the actions on that list of things that must be done to go carbon neutral, you know, the first biggest obstacle is always, you know, well, it's going to cost too much or it's going to cost more. Well, there's no excuse for that because the Clinton Climate Initiative is bringing resources to bear in the form of performance contracting and all kinds of other stuff. So there's no excuse. They should do it now. Number two, I want to go back to what Lori had to say about the Internet. And if you think about sustainability as a challenge, and if you think about it just from a bottom-line perspective, you know, corporate America has to make a lot of changes in the way that they do things to survive, period, whether they do it now, whether they'll move on the vitamin basis, or whether they have to wait until it's so painful they can't do anything else. If you think about the Internet boom, lots and lots and lots of young Americans during that generation made a ton of money. Today, they're social philanthropists, and they help change the world and help change the economy in the process. And there are probably 50 people or more in this room who could be the next wave of entrepreneurs who bring those green technologies to bear and who can help spur the next wave of movement when we're 20, 30 years out, when maybe it's not climate we're talking about, but it's water. So there's huge opportunity here, again, sort of back to that individual empowerment for you guys to change the structure of the way that we work as America.
Thank you. Jesse?
I guess the first closing remark I would make is that you are the ones that you've been waiting for, right? I mean, that is the most important thing. And I don't say that to be cliche at all, but you are the ones you've been waiting for. You are the movement. So the movement is not some other group of people. The leaders are not even the people that sat up here over the course of this day and spoke to you as experts. You are the experts and you are the leaders. And I feel incredibly privileged to serve all of you in working for the Energy Action Coalition, because I hope that we are a resource that is supporting the youth climate movement in this country. Because we're a resource, I want to make sure you all take advantage of what we have to offer. So you should join the Campus Climate Challenge, which is climatechallenge.org, and you can learn about the unbelievable victories that have happened on campuses across the country, like the University of California system making a commitment to go climate neutral. That was students that advocated for that to happen. Governors committing to make campuses go climate neutral. In Tennessee, every single public university passing green fees to purchase clean energy. I mean, these are unbelievable victories that you can learn about and make happen on your own campuses. And blog about it on itsgettinghotinhere.org, because it is getting hot in here. We need to hear from one of you. From all of you, and it's not just voices from the United States. This is a global movement, so interact with young people from all over the planet that are fighting this issue. And stay positive. It is scary, right? You look at the science, and it's terrifying when you hear people say we have less than 5 years. If we go past 2 degrees, yeah, it's scary, but there is so much hope and excitement in this room. And these solutions, we are going to literally transform our country. And we are going to have a part in all of that. And that is pretty unbelievable to be living at a time like that. So be excited. And I'm around tonight. So if anybody wants to, you know, dream up big ideas on how we're going to make this happen starting tomorrow, come find me and let's dream up those ideas together.
Thank you. Adam.
Well, I want to say how proud I am of you and of Energy Action and the work it's done. I want to really second the statement about us being, and the people in this room are the ones having the power. When I helped start the Sierra Student Coalition in high school, after I graduated college, I became the president of the Sierra Club at 23 years old. There is no reason that you all shouldn't be running all of the major environmental groups within the next 5 years. No reason. And that's actually what we desperately need. Is reinvention based on your new ideas. Now, people will tell you you don't have the resume, you haven't gone through the right internships, maybe you didn't graduate with the right GPA, maybe you can't rent a car yet. those things really don't matter. Everyone understands that everything is changing, that the digital movement, the dematerialization movement, these things are happening rapidly. Globalization in terms of understanding cultural sensitivities across the planet, these are things that you are profoundly prepared to do that generations, even myself, are not. Because by nature of your age and your unique experience because of how you've grown up, you are more prepared than people who are 10 years older than you, 20 years older than you, 50 years older than you. And those are the people who are running the movements who you need to do right by. So I can't tell you how important it is for you to take the power, and it is there for the taking. It is there for the taking. So my dream is that you take over.
So we're already running over, is that right, PJ? Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Well, before we recognize some more talent in this room, I'm going to make those three R's six: reduce, reuse, recycle, rethink, reinvent, re-envision. Thank you all so much for being here. Before you go, we have some amazing colleagues in the room to recognize. Thank you. I'm going to invite everyone to come and join me here on stage. And Jeffrey, sorry if I butcher your name, Jeffrey Howerton from Brown University, who has made a commitment to create a bike sharing program in order to cut carbon emissions and combat climate change. Great. Okay, we've got a couple of people who are going to join us. Chris Dupree, Rachel Chang, Ashley Salmo, and William West. And again, apologies if I messed up your name. We have made the commitment, you guys have made the commitment to provide the elementary school children in Boca Raton, Florida, with the ability to combat climate change by actively engaging them with educational tree planting programs. 14 trees in 14 schools. Congratulations, you guys. This is wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank CGIU. This has been a wonderful opportunity, and we plan on taking all the information that we've learned from CGIU back to our community in Boca Raton and teaching the elementary school kids everything about the prevention of global warming, the consequences of global warming, and anything else that we can do as far as even planting trees at the assemblies that we're going to be giving, and the importance of the role that trees have on the environment.
Thanks. It's like, whoa, here it goes. Okay, Seth Stein from the University of Rochester. Come on up, Seth. Seth gets the standing O. Congratulations. You have made a commitment to increase energy conservation by installing wireless energy metering systems on every residential and academic building at the University of Rochester River Campus, which will serve as a reminder to students and faculty of how much energy the campus is consuming and potentially shifting their behavior and helping them to reduce their energy usage. So congratulations to you. That's fantastic. Thank you. Is there anything you'd like to say?
First, I want to say that this isn't just me. I'm part of a group of four. I was just the lucky one that got to travel to New Orleans. In terms of this project is really focused on behavioral sustainability. And as Jesse said before, it's so important. We have such a tool with our generation that we network. We're the most connected generation in history. And we have to use that to our advantage. So I want to pose a challenge to people, because I'm not technically savvy, but someone to create, I mean, Brown University has an unbelievable listserv. It's an email list that connects people. And as was said before, we're going to have the message boards through CGI. But I think that there needs to be something bigger. And I'm proposing for someone to create a green Facebook, and whether they connect with Mark Zuckerberg or do it on their own, we need to connect everyone in this nation, because this is the most important issue. Terrorism and other issues that face our nation, they don't matter if we don't have a world. So this is the most important issue, so let's make it our most important issue. And also, along the lines with... Along the lines with the vote, there's a great website on grist.org. It tells you about all the candidates' positions having to do with the environment. So check that out. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, get ready to stand again. Last but not least, J.D. Lowry and Joe Ballard. J.D.'s from the University of Arkansas, and Joe Ballard is the Director of Public Services at the University of Arkansas. J.D. is a student. Welcome. Thank you. This is for you, and this is for the work that you will be doing, working with the Little Rock Green Restaurant Association and the Arkansas Sustainability Network to establish a Little Rock Area Green Business Program to encourage, help, and verify that local businesses meet higher standards of environmental performance. Thank you. Do you have anything you'd like to say?
Just real quick. The most important thing about this project is I'm creating a website that it pulls together all the existing resources, recycling opportunities that already exist in the community. There's tons of them, and the average American would like to get involved, but they don't have time because they've got life, they have responsibilities, day-to-day challenges that don't allow them to do it. But if there's a place where they can go get that information readily and reliable, and it's reliable, they can go and utilize those resources.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you so much. All right, here it is, the final quote. Margaret Mead, you may have heard this before. It's still true. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed people can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. Thank you all so much for coming. And we'll sit here and await the announcement about the next place we're supposed to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, the working session is now concluded. The closing plenary session will begin in Fogelman Arena at 5:30. Please proceed to Fogelman Arena for the closing. You will be seated in the black chairs on the stadium floor. Please pay attention to this announcement. At the end of the session, please stay in your seats in the black chairs on the floor for a group photo. Again, at the end of President Clinton's presentation, please